Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to a beautiful afternoon in Prashanthi Nilayam. Yesterday was Christmas, and what a Christmas it has been. I'm sure that all of you would have caught the live action on the website, and you would have seen what a magical transformation Sai Kulwant Hall has undergone. It's almost as if Australia has been brought to Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami had often said that having been born in Puttaparthi, he would never leave Puttaparthi. But well, Swami might not have traveled around the world. The world surely has traveled and come to Prashanthi. That's the feeling one gets as one walks through Kulwant Hall. And yesterday was a beautiful day, starting early in the morning with the carols, followed by a session of singing by the students and a beautiful cultural program in the evening with two talks. I'm sure all of you caught the action live. If you have not, you better go and listen and see the recorded versions on the website, because it is absolutely a treat for all the senses and the heart. Yes, so Prem, wasn't that a magnificent Christmas that we had?
Definitely, and I think it can't be said better than what you, the way you put it. They really brought Australia here. And we're not saying that because we have a few live guests in our studio. We have some friends from Australia over here. We're very happy to have them. We would have said it otherwise too, because it was so nice. Especially that early morning carols was wonderful. I mean, as always, there's some magic about that.
Singing early in the morning. And generally, Prem, you know, the way they are sung by the Westerners, I mean, or sung by the overseas devotees, is so different from the way Indian music is. And that change, you know, ours is, if you see Indian music, it's more of an individual performance, and almost all the Indian voices, you know, not much of a difference. Though the ladies have got a higher pitch, the men's pitch is maybe one octave lower. But if you see among the overseas and the foreigners and the Westerners, you see that there is almost two octave difference between the men's voice and the women's voice. And with that, the harmony that they create and they produce is something magical that only they can produce. And that we get a chance to witness and appreciate and enjoy to our thrill and thrall during Christmas time, because all carols are composed that way and they are sung that way. Really beautiful rendering, it brought tears to the eyes.
Exactly.
And these
were
tears
about,
of joy.
Right, talking about music and the difference in Indian and Western music, I remember one of the former band leaders of our university brass band, when he was talking, he actually brought out this very point in a very beautiful analogy. He said the music of the West and the East is like the food of the West and the East.
Okay.
He said, in the West, suppose you eat a pizza, you cannot eat the base of the pizza, you cannot eat the crust, or you cannot eat the cheese alone.
Huh.
It's all got to be together.
Okay.
You know, so every dish is like that. It's three or four things put together in the right proportion, and then you have the dish. But in Indian, you know, you have idli or dosa, which has accompanying dishes.
You know, exactly.
So you have the main dish, which you have a side dish. So he said the music too is like that. You know, the Western music is always a harmony. It's all things put together. You might not relish if one is heard alone, but put together it brings a beautiful, lovely fragrance together, isn't it?
Wow, that's a nice way, connecting two things that are close to my heart, music and food. So yes, it has been a marvelous Christmas, and just couldn't help going into that, because the Christmas spirit continues. There are decorations all around the ashram, there are lights. I mean, the nights are so bright because of the lights, and there is joy, there is festivity, and there is, I mean, that's it. There is sheer divinity, because it's only divinity that can bring so much of joy, happiness and beauty all around. And so some of that Christmas spirit is definitely going to seep into our afternoon satsang too, because today we are in the year 1950, and we are going to speak about the entrance of one monumental personality into Swami's mission. This personality was also born on a Christmas day in 1897.
Right, and we did mention about him before, 1897. And in fact, very interestingly, this person who we've spoken about before, and who is actually a very pivotal person in the whole series we are doing.
Exactly, because we are referring a lot to the books that he wrote, the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, and how he came to write that book, those series of books is in itself an amazing thing. We shall go through those stories in complete detail. but we shall take them as they come along. Before we go into that, there are some wonderful things that happened in 1950. For instance, January 1950 heralded a new age for the Indian country. Before we go into that, on the 14th of January, the Sankranti day, which is a very auspicious day, and often it has been considered as a day when if one concentrates on the Lord, one is sure to have his or her focus on the Lord throughout the life. On such a holy day, there was panic in Puttaparthi. And the panic was because Swami's sister, Parvatamma, was pregnant and she had developed labor pains.
Okay.
A few weeks before, her husband had passed away and she was, you know, already bereaved because of that. In this condition, there were some complications. And she had come to Puttaparthi and she was lodged in one of the rooms at Karanam Subbamma's house. And Ishwaramma, the mother, was very, very, very worried. She was upset and thinking what is going to happen because there were no readily available midwives in Prashanthi Nilayam. There was no Prashanthi Nilayam then. It's out of sheer force of habit that I'm saying so. In Puttaparthi, there were no midwives available. And so Ishwaramma was on a lookout for midwives to help Parvatamma, her daughter, to have a safe delivery.
Okay.
And as Ishwaramma, mother Ishwaramma, set out, she saw that from the opposite direction, her son, her youngest son, yes, Swami was walking straight towards Parvatamma's room.
Okay.
And Swami told Ishwaramma, you don't worry about anything. There will be no problem in the delivery. Because, you know, when you look at it, the Lord has come for the deliverance of the whole universe. Mm-hmm. So what is the delivery of one baby? So Swami walks to the room where Parvatamma is lodged and he opens the door and just puts one foot inside the room. Then withdraws the foot, tells all those people who are walking behind him to retreat, tells them you go back, and just puts his foot into the room, takes it out, then closes the door and tells you can go ahead with the delivery, it'll be fine. And on the 14th of January 1950, Parvatamma indeed delivered a healthy baby girl. Mm-hmm. And mother was fine, the baby was fine, and everybody were thrilled. And Swami actually told his sister that I will perform the naming ceremony of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he named the baby as Samrajya Lakshmi.
That's a royal name to give.
You know, it's actually a very, if you look at it in the context, a very funny thing. Samrajya means a sovereign nation.
Right.
Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth.
Wealth.
So it almost meant the goddess who will shower wealth on a sovereign nation.
Right.
And it made no sense. Because, you know, there are names like Swarajya Lakshmi. Mm-hmm. Swarajya Lakshmi had become a common name because India had won Swarajya in 1947.
Right.
Swarajya loosely translates as independence in English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So after 1947, the name Swarajya Lakshmi had become popular because it meant a baby girl who will bring wealth to the family in which she is born and a baby girl who has been born in a country that is independent because India had won freedom. So Samrajya Lakshmi, Ishwaramma thought, did Swami make a mistake? I mean, did you want it as Swarajya Lakshmi and you misspelt it? But you know, Swami just said it is Samrajya Lakshmi. Exactly 12 days after that, you know, okay. January 14th was the day of Sankranti.
The child was born.
And you know, January 26, 1950, what is it?
Right.
It was the day when India was declared as a republic, as a Samrajyam. Okay. You know, it was prophetic that Swami named the girl Samrajya Lakshmi. I'm sure the mother would be so thrilled because she wouldn't want her daughter to miss such a historic christening by just 12 days. And Swami named the baby girl as Samrajya Lakshmi. And that is one episode that took place in the January of 1950.
You know, talking about Swami helping in unpleasant deliveries, mm-hmm. I'm reminded of one thing, but you know, you spoke of something which happened so pleasant in 1950.
Mm.
Well, before I narrate the incident, I would like to say, maybe I should make a reference to an unpleasant event which happened last week.
Okay.
A small error which we made.
Oh, yes.
Week.
Yes.
So maybe we should correct it before we go forward.
Correct.
Yes, last week I think we made that mention that Mr. Tirumalachar, the poet from Venkatagiri.
The Vidwan, the scholar from Venkatagiri.
Right.
And we mentioned that Tirumalachar was the composer of the Satyasai Arati. That was a grave mistake. Tirumalachar actually composed the Suprabhatam,
which is sung even till date.
And we are grateful to more than three listeners who have written to us and who have been so kind enough to point this glaring error out so that we can correct this and make amends. In fact, you know, I am reminded that when Tirumalachar came to Swami in 1949, He saw this phenomenon. Swami was in the Pathamandiram.
Okay.
And in the Pathamandiram, Swami used to wake up before, that's what we discussed, you know. Swami used to wake up before anybody else, sweep and mop the whole place, keep it clean, make floral decorations to the two bus idols, that is one of Shirdi Baba, one of his own idol.
Right.
And then to the portraits there, and then keep the whole hall in readiness for the morning bhajans, and then wait for the devotees to come. And that is when a few ladies went to Swami and said, Swami, you should not sweep and mop this place. Swami, we will do it. But Swami did not relent. He would just continue to do as he used to do.
Okay.
That is when the women decided that they would get up an hour before Swami. And so if Swami used to wake up by say 4:45 or 5 in the morning, they would get up by 3:45 or 4 in the morning, sweep and mop the whole place, put the rangolis, what do you call rangoli, those decorations on the ground with chalk powder.
Right.
And they would make the floral arrangements.
Rice flour.
Rice flour, yeah. Rice flour and, yeah, right. Nowadays they even use chalk powder because rice flour, you know, the ants come to
right,
the...
Exactly, as Swami used to say, the tradition of putting that rangoli is to feed those ants. That was the idea, but Swami says now you put stickers and now you put all kinds of colored powder there and the ants lose their food.
Yeah.
But of course, yeah, continuing
yeah,
that
tradition. So, yeah, that I think, you know, if we go into each and every traditional practice that is done according to our ancients, all of them have such deep inner meaning and... I'm getting tempted, but I'll restrain myself and stick to the story. So, yes, so the lady started doing this early in the morning so that when Swami gets up, everything is ready and he need not do what they felt as these are tasks that the Lord should not do. They felt that Lord should not be burdened with these. And in fact, that is what Tirumalachar, they say, observed.
Okay.
That he would see these ladies getting up early in the morning, decorating, cleaning, doing everything and keeping everything in readiness for the Lord. And that is what inspired him to actually have a separate stanza in the Sati Sai Suprabhatam in praise of these ladies. There's
okay.
There's a stanza that runs, Sita Sati Sama Vishuddha Hridambu Jata, which means women with hearts as pure as Sita and Sati.
Mm-hmm.
They are here waiting upon the Lord. Mm-hmm. And that entire stanza, I think, is dedicated to these women who used to do this. I mean, in spite of knowing the story, we committed the blunder of saying that Tirumalachar composed the aarti. So Tirumalachar is the person who was instrumental in giving us the Sati Sai Suprabhatam.
So we do thank our listeners for pointing that out. In fact, we did figure it out quite a short while after we finished the satsang, but we
the
had to wait.
Damage was done.
We had to wait till this episode to correct ourselves. Now, going back to that beautiful episode of Parvatama which you narrated, now I'm reminded of another interesting thing which one of the devotees whom we interviewed here in our studio narrated. This auntie was from Ooty, and those days when Swami used to visit Ooty, before the school came up there, Swami used to stay at their house. And she had this wonderful episode to narrate. Once when she was undergoing pregnancy, she was admitted in a hospital for delivery. And her husband himself was her husband was a doctor himself. And so he was, his colleagues were looking on her and trying to help her out in delivery. And that time they figured out that this child which was about to be born was actually aligned the wrong way.
Okay.
A child is supposed to come out, head out first, right? Head
yes.
first. But this child was upside down.
So the leg,
So they couldn't go in for a regular delivery. They had to go in for a cesarean. So it was sometime in the afternoon. So the doctors came and they looked at this situation and they said it needs a surgery. So he said, it'll take a while, so we'll go finish our lunch and come back. And we will, take her for the cesarean. So that was the plan. So all these doctors and the nurses, they told her this news and they all went out. So they leave the ward and they walk towards the gate, going towards the canteen or whatever. And just then this lady is in a semi-conscious state and she sees Swami appearing there in that ward.
Oh my God.
Okay? And she says that it's not a dream, but I can't even say that I really saw Swami because I was in that state of, half consciousness.
Right?
And Swami appeared there and Swami came to her and Swami blessed her. And can you believe what Swami did? Swami just pierced his hand into her womb. Just put his hand right into her womb and just turned the baby around.
Okay.
In an instant. Okay. And this doctor and the team of doctors who were leaving, they'd hardly reached the gate when one of the nurses came running and said, "Madam, it looks like she's already delivering."
Okay.
So they all had to run back. You know, that gives an idea of how quickly this thing happened. Swami appeared there, put his hand into the womb, turned the baby around, and she was already, you know, the delivery process had already started.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And, you know, it also shows that when we have Swami with us, yes, we can be delivered not only from the womb, but we can be delivered from the troubles of the tomb too, if only we place our faith in Him. Because the Lord is the Lord of life. He's beyond everything. He's beyond the womb and the tomb. And
I don't know, I'm just tempted to put in another small incident here, which was narrated to us by our teachers. You know, this again happened during a pregnancy of a lady. You know, she was admitted to a hospital where the doctor was a devotee of Swami. So this lady had no idea of, you know, that who Swami was. She has never seen Swami before. And of course, there was a picture of Swami hanging. And I'm sure you will be aware of that picture. You remember in Vrindavan altar, we used to have a picture of Swami holding a branch of a coconut tree. And, you know, looking very lovingly. There's a beautiful picture of Swami. It's actually a black and white picture which was colored. You know,
the robe has been colored in that.
Right. So that picture was hanging in the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And it so happened that this lady had a labor pain very late into the night.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse had actually slipped out for some work or something. And so there was nobody there to attend. And Swami appeared there and helped her with the delivery. Okay. And the next morning, she was thinking that this must be one of the ladies who's working in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She thought Swami was a nurse.
Seeing the picture.
Seeing the picture.
And they got
there. Right. So the next morning the doctor comes in and he sees that this baby is already delivered and cleaned and nicely wrapped and lying beside the mother. So the doctor comes and asks, you know, how did it happen? And she says, that Narsimha only came and helped me, pointing to Swami's picture. And you know, the beautiful thing was, this was narrated by Swami himself in a discourse.
Oh.
Swami narrated this entire episode, how he went and helped that girl with the delivery and all that.
Uh-huh. And which discourse? Do you have any idea?
I think it's very early because the person who was translating Swami's discourse was Professor Narendra.
Okay.
The former principal of the Arts and Science College in Vrindavan. And the thing why this was narrated to us specially was, you know, when Swami was narrating this incident, Swami said, "Papum, that lady did not even know whether it was a man or a woman." Okay, referring to himself.
Mm.
And you know what the translator translated it as?
Huh?
He said, "Poor lady, she didn't know whether it was a god or a goddess who helped her."
Wow.
And for a moment, Swami paused and looked at him. And Swami was so happy that here was this translator, even for a moment, he was not forgetting who he's talking about.
Wow. That is indeed beautiful. And that also, you know, we were speaking about the womb and the tomb. And when you went along the womb direction, I went along the tomb direction, because another beautiful episode took place in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the April of 1950.
Okay.
You know, we spoke about Varadu. Varadu is the nephew of Mrs. Kamala Sarathy.
Kamala Sarathy from Delhi.
Yeah, from Delhi. So, Varadu had the chance of being a personal attendant for Swami, mm-hmm. helping him. He had that great privilege. And he says that one day, he says it was the 14th of April, 1950, sometime at around 9 o'clock at night, he says that Swami looked at him and another boy whose name was Krishna. And he looked in a manner which was indicative that Swami wanted to go to his room and rest.
Okay.
So they understood that. So they just cleared, they stopped whatever was going on and they said, they asked Swami, "Swami, shall we go to the room then?" So Swami walks up with them. And the minute he walks into the room, Swami collapses. He's in a trance. And both Varadu and Krishna try to hold Swami. And surprisingly, he's very light. And to their great amazement, they realize that Swami is not actually, though his body is very stiff, Swami is actually not heavy at all because he is levitating. And they're thrilled with this. They don't know what to do about it.
Swami and Swami was actually, Swami was not lying on them.
Not resting on their hands at all. Barely felt like they were holding a feather. They couldn't feel any weight at all.
Wow.
So they were in touch with Swami's body, but they never felt he's there carrying him, because that's why they say that we felt he was levitating. And as that happened, Swami is muttering under his breath. And when they hear it, Swami is saying something about a Maharshi passing away.
Okay.
A Maharshi means a great sage. A Maharshi passing away. And at the same time, the sole of his right foot splits open.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, a crack appears, it splits open, and 2 kilograms of fragrant vibhuti pours out.
Wow.
And they just don't know what to do, what is the spectacle that they are witnessing. They just hold on and they stand, you know, what else can you do? And Swami then comes out of his trance. And then Swami asks, Varadu, what did I say? He said, Swami, you were referring to some Maharshi passing away. He says, not some Maharshi, Ramana Maharshi has passed away. And they say, Swami, this Vibhuti also came, what do you want us to do? Swami says, we pack them in packets and distribute it to everybody. If you see the official declaration from the Ramana Ashram, they say that Ramana Maharshi passed away on the 14th of April 1950 at 8:47 p.m.
Precisely around the time this whole
yes,
episode happened.
Yes, so Varadu and Krishna do not remember the exact time, but they are this sure that it was somewhere around 9 o'clock, that's what they said. And yes, that was another thing that happened, you know, womb to tomb we were speaking. This is the Lord that travels with us before we get into the womb, travels with us after we get into the tomb, and even the journey from the womb to the tomb as well.
Beautiful. And in fact, even as you say that, I'm reminded of how, you know, our teacher Ravi Kumar sir put it once in a talk. He said, when you live for Swami and live with Swami, He not only takes care of your welfare, but He will also take care of your farewell.
Wow.
And He said, even the moment when you're leaving, He is there with you and making it special.
Exactly. You know, once you place your trust in Him and have your faith in Him, everything, you know, He plans it out so perfectly. I remember another teacher, school teacher, Silas, saying that out of a million possible things that could happen to you in life, Swami is constantly picking the best possible one and gifting it to you. So at this moment, if you're crying, just remember that this is the best possible thing that could happen out of a million other things. It's been so planned. And just knowing that in itself, you should feel so happy. You know, recently I was asked a question saying that, you know, when Swami left, it was devastating because it seemed like any other mortal, He was just struck down and He went. I mean, was that not a part of a plan? But you know, if you look back at so many incidents and episodes that happened even before Swami physically left, all those incidents were almost like building up for that 24th of April 2011. Okay. I remember one student, you know, he is currently in the Middle East, he settled there. Mm-hmm. He had the chance of serving Swami for more than a decade in Swami's room.
Okay.
And he was saying that one night in 2003, he said that he could see that Swami was coughing slightly and he was trying to wake up one among the several boys who were sleeping in the room.
Okay.
Swami would be on the cot and all others are lying down on the floor. And there was one particular student whom Swami used to always say that, whom Swami wished that he be the one who attend on Swami for that period. You know, what we used to call as the top form maybe. different people have that for whatever reason during different periods, and Swami wanted that boy. So this brother, as he woke up, he was seeing that Swami was trying to wake up the other boy without waking up the others. Mm-hmm. But that boy was in deep sleep and he didn't seem to be getting up. So when Swami tried this for 4-5 times, he couldn't bear it any longer. So he just got up, and you know, he said that I'm not supposed to go and help Swami because Swami is not seeking it from me. So he got up and went to wake up that other boy whom Swami was calling. And the minute Swami saw that, Swami said, no, don't wake him. You only come here. So he thought, you know, Swami, whatever Swami wanted, because this was the time when Swami had just had his fall. So he thought he wanted help to go to the bathroom or something like that. When Swami told him, you know, you sit here now.
Mm-hmm.
So he sat at Swami's feet and started pressing Swami's feet. Swami said, no, not down. Sit on my bed. Sit on the cot. He said, no, Swami, I'm comfortable here. No, you sit here. So he sat. He sat on Swami's cot next to Swami. And Swami just looks at him and asks, directly, without any introduction, nothing, directly just Swami asks, what will happen to you if I leave and go? He says, Swami, leave and go where? He says, no, when I leave and go. And he understood what Swami was saying. So he was shocked and he thought that, you know, this recent fall and Swami breaking his hip and all these things have brought in these kind of depressing thoughts in Swami. So he said, Swami, you don't worry, Swami. What you're thinking, this hip and all will heal. Swami, the doctors are saying that within few months you'll be running. So Swami, don't worry, don't speak such things. Swami smiles and says, no, you tell me, what will you do when I leave? What will happen to you if I leave? He says, Swami, I will just die. I won't be able to bear it. And then Swami pats him and says, I know. Before I leave, I will prepare you well so that nothing happens to you when I leave. Swami tells him that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you look at his life, 2 years later, he was told to leave Prashantiniliam, this boy who used to stay with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
He was told to leave Prashantiniliam again. That's another long story. But he left Prashantiniliam and he lives today. He lives today, and if you speak to him, you get so much of, you get a feel, you feel almost as if you're speaking to Swami when you speak to him. And that kind of, you know, it's almost like Swami is there. Swami is there in everyone, but you can perceive that. And if this has to happen to a person who said that, Swami, if you leave, I'm going to die, definitely it is Swami's blessings. And this episode took place in 2003, which is almost 8 years before. So all the while it is there in Swami's plan. In fact, another student who had the chance of walking behind Swami and, you know, pushing along Swami's wheelchair sofa.
Swami physically.
Yeah, in the last 3-4 years. He was saying that once when he took Swami to the interview room on the wheelchair sofa, Swami just referred to the place near the, in front of the Ganesha, in the Ganesh portico. Of course, that Ganesha has now moved.
Mm-hmm.
That Ganesha is now seated at the Gopuram gate,
right,
welcoming devotees as they come into the Prashantiniliam Mandir. But that Ganesh was in the Ganesh portico. Swami referred to that spot and said, that is where I will be forever. And in fact, Swami told him that I need to ready that place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, Prem, that was the year for the first time ever, even the convocation drama was held in Kulwant Hall.
Okay.
None of the program, you know, Purnachandra Auditorium was given up completely. Only for the Dasara Yagnam, because of the practice it used to be held there. You know, the Christmas program used to be actually in Purnachandra Auditorium. The boys' dramas, all the dramas would be held, and that is the announcement that would be made.
Right.
That shortly from now in the Purnachandra Sabha Mantapam, we will be having this program.
Right.
But 2010, at least there were 30 to 40 programs, and all of them were held in Kulwant Hall. And during all the programs, currently where the Mahasamadhi is, that is where Swami used to sit. And you know, before this, Swami had said, I need to ready that place.
In fact, of course, he started having all the bhajans also outside.
Wow, yes, that is another
even
thing.
Akhanda bhajan. Which
even Akhanda bhajan, and Swami simply said, no need of bhajans in the bhajan hall. We need to have bhajans outside. Imagine how much of, you know, what does an avatar needs to do to prepare a place? I mean, it's just a matter of will, but Swami got people used to, you know. And I remember the first time when Swami didn't come for the darshan, you know, in the morning. We were all shocked. And then it happened in the evening. We thought that morning darshan is doubtful, but evening. And then slowly we got used to the fact that if Swami doesn't come in the evening, we do our Veda chanting, we do our bhajans, receive aarti. And aarti was waved to the empty chair. I mean, empty in the sense physically Swami is not there. And people disperse. In fact, it was almost like Swami had a trial run for it on several occasions before it actually happened. So if we look at it, you know, Swami says that when death comes to you, you say that, God, you didn't give me a warning. God says, I gave you a warning. I made your teeth fall, you put on dentures. I made your hair white, you put dye. I gave you wrinkled skin and you did cosmetic surgery, you put on other cosmetics and you made it fine. And suddenly when death comes, you say, Lord, what are you doing? You didn't give me a warning. What do you mean I didn't give you a warning? I feel that's the same thing. Everything is part of the master plan. Coming out of the womb, going into the tomb, and everything in between, and everything before and after that also. Everything is part of the master plan. And that we are able to see even in from those early days, as we saw in the case with Ramana Maharshi.
I mean, that's definitely true. None of us can complain that there were no signs. But the fact was, we always look the other way around. You know, we chose to look the other way. Because we knew that people were telling that, you know, Swami is preparing us, Swami is doing this, maybe Swami is wanting us to live with his physical absence, but the fact was, we were always looking the other way. We didn't want to accept it, but definitely Swami knows best, and that is the idea, because eventually, you know, all these stories which we narrate, what Swami did, Swami could appear there, Swami could appear here, you know, Swami could transport himself to any place. Be it across the globe, anywhere. Swami could cure anything. You know, he helps with delivery, he helps with everything. But if a situation comes in our life when Swami does not do something which we think is favorable to us, we should also understand that his discrimination is also much, much, much higher than all our discrimination. That he has a choice in front of him, and he has our welfare in his mind, and what he chooses is perfectly right for us at that time.
You know, as you were saying, I was reminded yesterday, Swami's discourse on Christmas Day, Swami started off by making three statements and telling that one is morality, one is spirituality, and all the three have to be together. And when it came to spirituality, he said, spirituality is represented by the statement, Na bruyat satyam apriyam. Never speak
an unpleasant truth.
An unpleasant truth, never speak right. it. And you know, for us, if we see, because we are not in that Advaita Darshanam Jnanam, Swami said that Jesus' life shows us that true wisdom is the ability to see oneness in all. And he said that is what Jesus' life shows. But people call by different names and fight and they go along the sublanes. But since we are not in that Advaita Darshanam Jnanam, for us, Swami leaving the physical frame is an unpleasant thing. And when Swami himself has said that the ultimate in spirituality is not to speak the truth which is unpleasant, how could he tell that? Because all that he did was give hints. He gave hints, we were not ready to take the hint. And we were not ready to take the hint because we just felt that this can't happen. This is not pleasant. It's an unpleasant thing. But where the Lord's actions are concerned, what is pleasant, what is unpleasant? Everything is the Lord's action which has to be celebrated. And though we are not ready for it, that is what it has come to pass today. We celebrate even the 24th of April, just as we celebrate the 23rd of November. Yes, everything about the Lord's life is to be celebrated.
Yes, Arvind, and I don't know, maybe we've taken a long detour.
Yes, we get back to...
But it's still Christmas season, as you said, we heard a beautiful discourse yesterday. And I'm really tempted to play one small clip. We've played this before. And Swami describing Christmas in Prashanti Nilayam and what it is to be in Prashanti with Swami. It's a small clip and I'm really, really tempted to play it.
Please, I'm tempted to hear it.
It's a wonderful Christmas gift from Swami.
You all are in Kingdom of Sai. You all are in Sai's home. You all are in Sai's light. You all are in Sai's heart. I will bless you in the holy day, holy night. This is your right.
That's that sweet little clip I mentioned, and how beautiful and how profound is that?
The last statement, you know, this is your right.
This is your right.
That's a speciality I feel of the Satya Sai avatar, you know. Krishna said, ananyas chintayantomam yejanam paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamiham. Those who think of me incessantly with no other second thought, I will take care of their welfare. You know, if Swami had laid that condition out in the Kali Yuga, I think none of us would have qualified to be taken care by Swami. And that's why Swami made it very simple. He said, if you need me, you deserve me. And that is why Swami says, it is your right. It is your right to receive blessings from me.
When I was in final year in Vrindavan, Swami took us all to a devotee's house to have a session of lunch and some time spent with the family there in their house. And that time Swami was talking to an elderly couple. And Swami looked at all of us and said, you know this couple, I perform their marriage.
Okay.
And they're quite an elderly couple. And then Swami said, I'll also perform your Shashti Purti. You know, the marriage which is performed in the 60th year and the husband is 60 years old. You know, it's supposed to be like a spiritual marriage. Swami said, I'll also perform your Shashti Purti. Swami said, okay. And the couple was understandably overwhelmed and they looked at Swami and said, Swami, thank you so much. And Swami said, why thank you? It is your right. It is my responsibility. You know, here is the Lord who is taking responsibility for all these things. It definitely, for us, is a blessing. You know, it is a huge blessing and a huge act of grace.
Definitely, Prem. With this, dear listeners, we'll come back to what we said, the entry of Sri Narayan Kasturi, a great person, a wonderful instrument of the Lord. We'll come to that story after this break. So, keep listening. Don't go away anywhere. This is going to be a short break, after which it's going to be some more grandeur and glory of the Satya Sai Avatar.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Afternoon Satsang, and we are coming to you live from our studios in Prashant Nilayam. We're talking about Satyam Shyam Sundaram, and today we're talking about that person who authored the Satyam Shyam Sundaram series. You know, the person who played a very, very important role in taking Swami's message to the world. Because this person is none other than Professor N. Kasturi, translator of Swami's discourses, the editor of Sanatan Sarathi.
The person who penned down all of Swami's Vahinis and who has also written Swami's biography.
Right.
You know, what Valmiki is for Lord Rama and Vyasa is for Lord Krishna, we can definitely say Kasturi is for the Satya Sai avatar, and maybe even Shirdi Sai avatar too, because, I mean, sorry, what Hemad Pant is to the Shirdi Sai avatar, that is what Kasturi is to the Satya Sai avatar.
And for those of you who don't know about Professor Kasturi, he was in fact a very renowned professor of history, and we all are very familiar with the appellation Akashvani. The All India Radio is called the Akashvani.
Yes.
That name was given by Professor Kasturi.
Exactly. You know, Akashvani or the All India Radio, it was one of the most far-reaching services started by the government of India, because radio was something that was popular in every village, every town, every city in India. And they wanted a name for it, an Indian name. All India Radio was more like an English name that had been
right.
given. And it was Kasturi who called it Akashavani, which means an ethereal voice
ethereal
from
voice.
The skies. And Akashavani is a very, very spiritual kind of name, because when Lord Krishna was born, they say that Kamsa heard an Akashavani, which said that the Lord has taken birth in order to annihilate you. So Akashavani, that was the name that Kasturi gave.
And that's the name which sticks to the All India Radio till today.
Even till today, you
hear the announcement, you're listening to Akashavani.
And you know, Kasturi was a multilingual personality.
Exactly. You know, some of these elders used to tell us, you know, nowadays you have announcements. Somebody is making an announcement in English followed by an announcement in Telugu. When Professor Kasturi used to make an announcement, he used to make it in English, in Telugu, in Tamil, in Malayalam, in Kannada. And I don't know if any other, Hindi maybe. So you can imagine one person making announcements in 6 or 7 languages.
Exactly. I mean, and it was not that he had a working knowledge of these languages. He has got literary works
right.
in these languages. He has won many awards. In Kannada, his works are very well known. They are dripping with satire and humor. And all one has to do is flip through the pages of his book, Loving God, to get a taste of the rich sense of humor that he has. It's unbeatable.
And apart from his ability to write, he was a brilliant speaker. And there was some, you know, I could only say a charm in the way he used to speak. That gentleness and that, you know, motherly voice, that's the only way I could put it. And for those who have not heard it, I think we should play a small clip in which he himself narrates a small incident about Swami.
Yeah, you know, I was just reminded, before we play the clip,
right.
one small incident. I think, you know, they were, Swami had called 3 people for interview.
Okay.
I am not remembering their names exactly now, but it was something like Ram Murthy, Krishna Murthy and Narsimha Murthy.
Okay.
Now all were, you know, Murthys. So Kasturi also was walking into the interview room thinking that he has been called.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami told him, Kasturi, wait, that is Ram Murthy, that is Krishna Murthy, that is Narsimha Murthy. And Swami said, I am also a Murthy. Murthy meaning, it also means an idol.
A deity. Right.
Swami said, I am also a Murthy. So, you know, the interview is going to be an interview with Murthys. So what are you doing? What are you doing in this group? So Kasturi immediately on the spot, you know, he replied saying, Swami, they're all Murthys, but with me, it'll become Purti.
Right.
Purti, which means complete.
Complete.
And so he said, Swami, without me, it's not complete, so please. Swami laughed and, you know,
absolutely.
Invited him inside.
You know, he would say that as devotees, we should all not be Chatterjees. We should all become Banerjees.
Playing on the surname, the Bengali surname.
Chatterjee,
you know,
Banerjee.
Yeah, Chatterjee and Banerjee. He said we should not speak, but our actions should speak louder. So yes, I mean, there are so many wit and witticisms of Kasturi. And maybe, Prem, you know, we should take up 2-3 satsangs on the life of Kasturi itself.
Exactly. I think we'll have more than enough matter to do that. Because, you know, even if you walk around and speak to people who have moved with Kasturi, Professor Kasturi, they will have wonderful stories to narrate of his wit and charm. You know, maybe just one story which I was reminded yesterday when I was reading about Professor Kasturi. You know, once Swami showed him a doll, you know, that doll which you give a key and it goes around beating a drum.
Mm.
We all would have played with it as little children. You know, small
yes.
doll, you give it a key, it goes around beating a drum.
Yeah, when you wind the key. Huh?
Okay, and somebody had got that gift for Swami, and Swami was so amused by it. You know, every now and then he was giving a key and putting it on the table and looking at it. And Professor Kasturi came by and Swami said, Chudu Kasturi, see how nicely it is doing. So Professor Kasturi looked at it and he said, Swami, I am also like that doll. He said, I also will go around beating the drum and speaking about you. And that's what he meant. He said, Swami, I am like that drum. I go around beating the drum.
I am like that doll, huh?
I am like that doll. And Swami looked at him and, you know, gave a very stern look. And Swami pushed that doll. And Swami said, I will do this to you. Okay? And you can imagine what would have happened. The doll fell down, but it's still beating the drum.
Yes.
And immediately Kasturi said, Swami, I will also be like that. Even if you make me fall, I will still beat the drum.
Wow.
And when he actually narrated this to some of our teachers who had gone to see him, he was actually on his deathbed in the hospital. And he said, that's what I'm doing now. Swami has pushed me down, but I'm still beating the drum.
You know, Swami has pushed him down, Swami has raised him up, has done everything. I'm reminded of another episode when, you know, he wanted a mantra because he did not come directly to Swami. He has been through Ramakrishna Mission. I don't know if he has been through Chinmaya Mission also. He has been through...
He has served for 25 years in the Ramakrishna Mission.
So, his belief in a mantra was so strong and firm. And he felt that having a mantra is the only way to redeem himself. And so, a mantra is received from your guru. So, he goes to Swami and he says, Swami, I want a mantra. And I believe this was a time when Swami was on a North India trip to Rishikesh and Badrinath and other places, holy places there.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kasturi is accompanying Swami and he says, Swami, we are visiting such holy places, pilgrimage place. It's a very auspicious time, auspicious place. You should definitely give me a mantra. And Swami keeps postponing, you know. Delays are not denials, but they almost feel like denials with Swami sometimes, you know. So Swami keeps delaying and never gives Kasturi a mantra. Finally, one day when Kasturi pesters Swami a lot, Swami says, okay, tomorrow morning I'll give you a mantra. So Kasturi is so excited, he's not able to sleep and he gets up early in the morning, has his ablutions, he's ready, he has done his prayers and he's waiting. And Swami comes and starts speaking casually, normally and nowhere is Swami showing any inclination towards telling him a mantra or... Finally, you know, Swami gets breakfast served and says, come, let's have breakfast, after that we have to leave. And now Kasturi is dejected. He's crestfallen and a tear almost, you know, streaks from his eyes on over his cheeks. And Swami sees him, gets up, walks to him, places a hand over his shoulder and says, Kasturi, what happened? And now, you know, Kasturi feels even more hurt. He says that, you know, he's acting as if he doesn't know. He says, Swami, you told you'll give me a mantra and Swami, what is this? Swami says, Kasturi, why do you want mantra? And Kasturi says, Swami, why does anyone want mantra? Swami, I want mantra so that I can go close to God. Then Swami bends, almost hugs him, comes close to his ear and says, how much closer, Kasturi? And then, you know, Kasturi suddenly realizes and now he's in tears. He's in tears and he realizes the futility for a mantra when the person is here who says that you need not just listen to me and tell Brinjal and I will give you moksha. You don't need to chant a mantra. That is the power and he realizes that and he now has more tears. You know, that is the magic of Swami. His ability to convert your tears of sorrow into tears of joy in moments. And that is what Kasturi experienced and that is what all of us experience when we relive these beautiful stories.
And so the clip which I'm going to play for you today, dear listeners, is Professor Kasturi talking about his experience of being an editor of Swami's works. You know, how difficult is that? Because here is Swami, he called that work Sanatan Sarathi, he called that magazine Sanatan Sarathi, which means the same person who came and gave the Gita to that Krishna who was confused, he's now giving you the message in the form
of this.
Who gave
it to Arjuna.
To Arjuna, who's going to give it to the people in the form of this monthly magazine. So here was Kasturi being appointed as the editor of that magazine. And you could imagine what he would have gone through.
Editing Swami's words.
Editing Swami's words. And that's exactly what he's going to talk about. Dear listeners, we're playing this clip so that if you've not heard Professor Kasturi speak before, you will have an idea of how wonderful a speaker he was. And the wit and humor is definitely not something which you will miss.
Baba once said, trying to explain me, you people, you are trying to talk about me. You have heard speeches by Dr. Bhagavantam's son, Professor Nanjundaya, and many others referring to Bhagavan, giving instances of Bhagavan's omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotency, etc., etc. But do you know what Bhagavan characterizes them as? He says, suppose you want to explain to a person the Himalayas. This morning somebody spoke about the Himalayas, the Upanishads being the Himalayas. And you ask, what are the Himalayas? Himalayas, and he takes a small pebble. See, this one, you imagine this to be about 5 miles high and 1,500 miles broad, And this is Himalayas. So take a stone, take another stone, put half a dozen stones together and ask the person to magnify it in his mind. Such instances, millions of them, happen every moment all over the world. So this is one instance. Now imagine million instances happening in a billion places for millennia. Add up all that and then you get Bhagavan himself has written in the Gita Vahini. I was the editor of Sanatana Sarathi. He has put me there. And just as Bhagavantam said, he consulted our principal of the Pathshala whether Bhagavan knew enough Sanskrit to quote some of these things that he was doing. I remember Ishwaramma, the mother of Bhagavan. There was one Amritananda in my house. And after Bhagavan gave one of his magnificent discourses, she came to my place and called out this Amritananda and said, "Yememo cheptare, anta sariga unda?" Poor mother. She was worried. What is this? We didn't put him into any parshala. We have not seen him read any book or study under a pandit. And he is talking for 1 hour, 1.5 hours or all kinds of things. She asked that old pandit, "Is it all correct?" So that feeling, and because I was the editor of Sanatana Sarathi, so that if Baba writes something in it, I am responsible. People may say, "He may write, but what are you, editor, doing?" So I felt an editorial responsibility in that matter. And in the Gita Vahini, while he was writing it serially, there was one passage. Arjuna called Krishna Keshava. And Krishna smiled because he realized that Arjuna had known the truth about him. Are you? What does this Keshava mean so much? If you say Keshava, the usual meaning of Keshava is that there was a Keshi, there was one horse-faced or something, some demon whom Krishna killed. And if you kill a horse-faced demon, is it such an important incident and the most important appellation for God? So that when he calls him Keshava, Krishna is very much pleased. Arey, this fellow has understood me all right. To kill a horse-faced or the cousin of the horse, you know. Suppose, after all, a horse is not very different from the cousin. To kill a person like that, is it such a thing to be happy over? And Arjuna? So, I thought there must be some snag in it. And I went round. Because first thing is our Kamavadhani. He consulted him, I also go to him. And there were others in the Pathshala. I waited for some festival. And a number of big pandits landed in Puttaparthi. I consulted all of them. Then I thought I must go to Bangalore and consult the Shankara Vidyalaya and all that. I knew some people there, people who had, as the Telugu statement says, grown horns. I consulted those horned gentlemen also. And then they could explain. Then I thought, why should I go to these persons? Shankaracharya has written a commentary on the Vishnu Sahasranam, on 1000 names of Vishnu. And Keshava must be one of them. And he must have written explanation of that word Keshava. So I went and consulted Shankara's commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam. And there I find Keshava means Ka plus Isha plus Va. Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. These three are but one Kesha. Because I have no hair to show you. One Kesha, one hair of the Lord. And Bhagavan has got so much of hair. So, one hair of Swami, one hair is equal to the power and the glory and the might of all the three facets of divinity. No wonder when Arjuna called Krishna Keshava, Krishna felt, ah, this man has understood my reality. He knows that a hair of my head is only, the power of the Trinity is only as trivial as a hair on my head. I satisfied myself and I slapped my own cheeks for feeling that an editor is a very important person. And then Baba told me, when I went up to him, the Chesko, of course, it's your duty, you convince yourselves. But he had followed me into all the places to which I had gone. And he had heard even my whispered conversation with the pandits who had come to Puttaparthi. And he read me like an open book and said, of course I appreciate your, because Baba appreciates. Even in Gita, Baba is appreciated. He has told Arjuna all the 18 chapters and he has given him also a wonderful demonstration of his being the totality of all this. But yet, in the 18th chapter you will find, Itite jnanam akhyatam kukhyat gukhyataram maya. I have told you the most secret of all the secret doctrines. Vimarsyetad asheshena. Go on. Ashesham. Without even leaving off a little letter or word of what I have told you. Vimarsha. Discuss it in your own mind. Think it over. Yathechasi tathakur. And if you feel that you have got to follow my teachings, do it. Otherwise, leave it off. That has been the message of Krishna, and that is the message of Krishna, the Sai also, Swami also, because he always says, if you tell a person, shh, don't talk. Don't simply say, ush, shh, 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 shh. Don't simply say that. They might think that Swami has got earache or something, and therefore if you make noise, he will be disturbed. Tell them why. Don't simply command. Give them the reason. Let them be satisfied. Immersiated asheshena. Give them why. They have got a right to understand the reason behind all the rules and regulations. So, if I talk about Baba, or give you some stones, pebbles, it is only so that you can magnify it in your own minds and build a Himalaya for yourself. Because it is impossible to describe the Himalayas.
So that was the clip from Professor Kasturi's talk, which was given in a summer course in 1976.
Wow, Prem, I'm sure this is not yet on our website.
Right, it's just getting ready for that.
Yeah, I'm going to hear it and... You know, Prem, I'm just feeling like a fool. I don't feel like talking at all. It's so wonderful.
I think he's also described us about throwing pebbles at people and trying to describe the Himalayas through those pebbles. That's what we're trying to do here and how beautifully he's put it.
But then, if we enjoy seeing those pebbles, Swami is fine with that. You know, even as he was speaking, I was remembering one or two things. You know, he was saying that Krishna said that all these that I have told you, you mull it over in your mind 1,000 times. And then, if you wish to follow, you follow it. I mean, look at the Lord, you know that this is the ultimate that anybody can follow. And yet he does not say, you just shut up and follow this. He says, if you wish, mull it over and then, and when we look at the way, you know, Swami used to speak also, if you go to him with a proposal and say, Swami, this is my house, Swami, this is the way, this is what is the plan, this is the thing, this is what the architect has said. If it is rubbish, Swami will never say that is rubbish, do this. Swami will say that is good. Okay, what he has said, his opinion is good. Kani na uddeshamlo, and Swami would always preface his statement with that na uddeshamlo, which means
in my opinion.
And Swami would never say that, you know, this is the way to do it or you know, you'll be doomed, do whatever you want. He would never say that. He would say, that is good, yeah, that is good. What he says is also good. But what I feel is this. And invariably, you know, things would always happen according to what is Swami's uddeshamlo. Because invariably we would realize that is what is the best thing. And the most beautiful thing about Swami is, you know, after Swami says something, you go back and think, oh my God, why didn't I think of it? It's so simple. Swami has that ability. You know, one simple example, again, it's about that famous Mahavakya, you know, Tattvamasi.
Right.
Tattvamasi, Tat means that, Tvam is you, Asi art. So it often translates as, Thou art that,
right.
You are that. So it is said as one of the great Advaitic statements, you know. Often we wonder, how can it be Advaita? Advaita is about only one being there. And how can you say Tat Tvam Asi, you are that, which means again there is two, right? So this confusion was there, and then, you know, in one discourse, I am not remembering which, but Swami made it so simple. Swami said, what is the meaning of Tat Tvam Asi? So all of us, you know, we just thought Tat Tvam Asi, that's what Tat Tvam Asi is. Swami said, Tat Tvam Asi. Swami said, it is not Tat Tvam Asi, you are that. It is Tat Tvam Asi. Tat Tvam means essence. And asi is ease. Essence is. Swami said, that is the meaning of that statement. And now it becomes Advaita. And then you think, oh my God, why didn't I think of this here? I mean, it is so creative and unique. The same thing like, God is nowhere. Swami says, you break it, it becomes God is now here. You say, wow, this is marvelous, why didn't I think of it? That is how Swami simplifies. He simplifies so that even a child understands it. I mean, Tattvamasi and God is now here is so easy and beautiful to explain, and that's why we make stories out of it, examples out of it, and present it to everyone. Once explained, even a child can understand. But when it is not explained, even the scholars and pandits struggle to explain. And yet, having such wisdom, when Swami says, you know, God knows everything yet acts as if he knows nothing, man knows nothing yet acts as if he knows everything. Knowing everything, still Swami would always say, na uddeshamlo. What a beautiful lesson in humility.
Definitely, even as you were saying that, you know, the thought which comes to me is, invariably what Swami does to each one of us is, you know, he initially attracts us or initially amuses us with the things which he can do. And then he starts breaking down the reasons which we have built and the ideas which we have built, you know, our own preconceived notions. He breaks them up, and Swami says, the truth is such much simpler than all these things. If we look at Professor Kasturi's life, you know, he comes to Swami in a ripe old age. He comes, I think, just a few years before his retirement. I think he has almost made his half a century when he comes to Swami.
I think he retired in 1954.
Right. So when he comes to Swami, he's actually 50. You know, he's having two sons. One son is already studying and one daughter is of manageable age. And he's been a professor. As we said, he's worked with the Ramakrishna institution, the mission there. So he's come with a lot of baggage in that sense. So here is a person into whose life Swami is entering. And to make things even worse, he comes just after a disaster. You know, he loses his 16-year-old son who is, as he himself describes, apple of not only his eyes, his family eyes, but wherever he was shining because he was a brilliant student, a brilliant cadet corps, he was a brilliant marksman, he was a brilliant speaker. And he was very, very patriotic. He was dying to, you know, serve the nation which was just being born. And this son is lost in the year 1947.
10 days after India became independent, Kasturi writes it saying that he died, he could live only 10 days in an independent India, an India which he could have served long in
even
a fruitful manner.
Even as Pandit Nehru is giving that historic speech,
the Tryst with Destiny.
The Tryst with Destiny. He was actually on his, on the bed, listening to that speech, and even before that speech could be completed, he had to be rushed in an ambulance to a hospital. That's how serious he was, and as you said, 10 days later,
He was consumed by typhoid, right?
Right.
And yes, that was the kind of condition Kasturi was in when somebody came to him and told him that, you know, don't lose hope. In fact, a fellow monk from the Ramakrishna order.
I think Swami Shambhavananda.
Shambhavananda, okay.
Shambhavananda.
Yeah, he told Kasturi that don't worry. The same Lord who has inflicted this wound on you will also heal this wound. A statement that made sense to Kasturi much later on, but at that point in time it seemed so rubbish. He was wondering how could anything ever, cool the raging fire in my heart where I have lit the funeral pyre of my own son. He was in that tragic state. When another, you know, friend of his son comes to him and gives him a few vibhuti packets, saying that this is from Satya Sai in Puttaparthi and, you know, this will bring you some kind of high meaning comfort. And, you know, in Kannada, the word Sai means go and die. That's the way you often curse at people whom you get angry upon. So just now he has lost his son, and when he heard this name itself, he felt something very funny and he thought this is crazy. And he also was told that this is a reincarnation of Shirdi Baba. And, you know, that put in a kind of fear in him, saying that, oh my God, maybe he's something. And so therefore he didn't just throw away the vibhuti packets. He didn't have the courage and inclination to simply throw it away. He gave it to some neighbor who had a Shirdi Baba idol at home. And that was the first tryst with Swami.
Okay. And, you know, around that time, I think as we mentioned, his daughter was there, Padmini. Padma Kasturi, she still lives in the ashram, and we've had a long series with her, one of the most popular series where she speaks about her interactions with Swami and about her father too. You know, he's interested in getting this little girl married, and you know, it's quite understandable. There's a huge calamity which has struck the family. They're looking for something which is more brighter, you know, something to look forward to. And that's when they actually are thinking about the marriage of Padma Kasturi, and I think
and at that point in time, Padma is in love with one young lad by the name Balachandran.
Right.
Now, Balachandran is the son of a certain Parameshwara Iyer, who in turn is the son of a person who was Kasturi's friend. And this person, we don't know his name, he used to call himself as Potti Iyer. Potti Iyer means Iyer the dwarf. And Kasturi was first shocked when he was introduced to this person as Potti Iyer. And this Potti Iyer says that, you know, I'm a devotee of Satya Sai Baba. I met him at Delhi. When I had gone to Delhi, I had come to know about Swami. And then I met him and it's amazing. He's my Lord. He's my everything. And so he says, and he called me Potti Iyer, and what a blessing it is. And Kasturi thought that this person has got granified. You know, he's proud about an appellation that actually degrades his form.
And that's typical of Swami.
By somebody who is 1/4 his age. He says, Potti Iyer.
Should we add, not much taller than him.
Yes, not much taller than him. So he felt that this was crazy. And Potti Iyer would go on and regale and narrate stories about Swami to Kasturi, who was not even slightly interested. In fact, Kasturi used to get, you know, scared to come cross paths with Potti Iyer, lest he get caught and get hammered. You know, he felt that Potti Iyer sees him as a nail and himself as a hammer. So that was Kasturi's experience with Potti Iyer. But then Kasturi found that this Balachandran, that is Potti Iyer's grandson, he was an amazing conversationalist. And he was also rational in his approach. And the way he spoke about Swami actually made more sense to Kasturi. And slowly, Kasturi saw himself falling in love with this boy and thinking, how wonderful if it is, this boy becomes my son-in-law. That is when the problem arose, because Kasturi was not drawing a huge salary. And Parameshwara Iyer felt that he would not be able to afford the kind of dowry that his son is eligible to. Son is worth. It's almost like, you know, in each degree. In some places, it still continues like that, you know. As each degree is added on to the boy, the boy's worth goes up, and that is the amount that the girl's parents have to pay. And here was Kasturi with hardly any fortune. So in order to discourage any of this, Parameshwara Iyer comes to Kasturi and says, you don't worry, it is my job to find a proper son-in-law for you. Which meant, don't I my son,
I'll find a good boy for your daughter.
Yeah. And that is, it was amidst all this that, you know, Kasturi began to talk to Balachandran and get impressed about Swami, and it was actually listening to Balachandran that Kasturi finally agreed that I will have a darshan of Swami, as you call it, one. And in 1948, we have discussed how, you know, Swami was at Sakama's home.
Right, Swami was ailing from a mysterious kind of, health problem.
Yes.
But that actually gave a window for so many people to come to Swami, because when Swami was staying in that Sakama's house in Bull Temple Road, and I think another devotee's house.
Exactly, so Swami used to move around these Bangalore devotees' home, and forget his name, Thiru Venkata.
Yes. Thiru Venkata Pillai.
We'll get back with the name maybe in the next satsang, but it was at his home on the same Bull Temple Road that they went to meet Swami, Kasturi and the Iyers. And when they went there, Swami was sitting and reading some book and burying his face. And he was reading a letter or some paper, and that was it. And they walked out, and Kasturi was not at all impressed.
In fact, the first impression he has is, here is the silent Swami. And the thought which comes to him is, if this silent Baba could tell one word to this family, you know, asking them to take my daughter into their family, I think these fellows will just blindly accept. You know,
yeah, that is a greedy thought that came in his head. They said that, I mean, if you read Loving God, he says, oh, these people have got so much devotion to this mop of crinkly hair. If only this mop of crinkly hair can just tell them that, you know, get your son married to Padma, I think it'll all be done. And he even expresses this to his wife, saying that it'll be nice, right, if this Swami tells him. But then, you know, in the meanwhile, Parameshwaraya finds a plausible groom for Kasturi's daughter. And then when Kasturi tells this to Padma, Padma is in tears. She's heartbroken because she had already pledged her heart to Balachandran. But then, you know, Kasturi tells her that this is the way of life, you have to accept it. And a meeting is also scheduled for the parents of the bride and the parents of the prospective groom. And in fact, Parameshwar Iyer comes to Kasturi and says, don't worry, I will accompany you. We will talk and, you know, we will negotiate so that you don't have to pay a huge dowry and all that, you know, he says. He's being very friendly to Kasturi. I'm your friend as long as you don't die my son. That is the condition. So on the day that has been appointed, in fact, he even says, let the day of meeting be a Thursday. You know, Thursday is a very good day according to Swami, and, you know, he again brings in the Swami, and Kasturi is saying, oh my God, how is it? How is it that you have some blind devotion to somebody who is your own age? Because Balachandran's age and Swami's age were similar. And he is simply amazed by this, but he thinks that it is absolute foolishness. And then on the day when they are supposed to meet the groom, Parameshwar Iyer doesn't turn up.
Mm-hmm.
So Kasturi is a little nervous. He rushes to Parameshwar Iyer's house, knocks on the door. And when they open it, the door, he says that the husband and wife are in some intense conversation. And they are whispering to each other. He says, I was wondering what this susurration was all about. You know, they're talking to each other. And then, you know, Parameshwar Iyer says, Wednesday, that is yesterday night, I had a dream. Swami came and instructed me. And Kasturi says, oh my God, he has a madcap. You know, because this is what often happens. The mind plays tricks on you when the brain is asleep. When the brain is not at home, the mind comes and plays tricks. And here is this guy saying that Swami gave instruction. And so what was it about? He says, you know, Swami came and blasted me. He scolded me for trying to find a son-in-law for you. And now Kasturi says, you know, I'm sorry. I know you are trying to do good for me. You know, please forget what he said, you know. I'm sorry that you had to face such thing because of
me.
Trying to help me. He says, no, that is not the whole story. He said, Swami said, you come and meet me. You come and meet me, I have to talk to you. And he says, next day today, he had just gone for darshan and he has come back from darshan, and that's what they're discussing. And he said that Swami said, the person who should marry Kasturi's daughter Padma is your son Balachandran. That is, and Kasturi now is suddenly shocked. He says, did he mention my name? He says, yes, he mentions your name. He says, he knows you well. And did he mention my daughter's name? Yes, he mentioned your daughter's name. Oh, Kasturi is awestruck. He's saying, how does he know about me? Did he read about me? I mean, maybe, because Kasturi was a famous literary writer. Maybe. It's quite updated, huh? Wikipedia was not there, and yet Swami knows about each of the people. But then, you know, the worry that Parameshwar Iyer is having is, I have already fixed you up with that other guy. Now, how do we cancel that? Kasturi says, this is your worry. No problem. I will manage that. And actually, Kasturi fabricates a fib and says that, you know, it's off, there's some reason we can't, and so he puts it off. But Kasturi is so happy, he comes and tells his wife, you know what, this Baba is worth cultivating. Very useful. Practical benefits. He helps marriages. And that is how Kasturi agrees to see Swami for a second time. And that is a meeting that's unforgettable and amazing. This happens in 1949, in July 1949. And when they go to the bungalow where Swami is, Swami comes and, you know, he sees aarti, the bell being rung and all this, and he's wondering what is happening. Swami calls him in for interview. And before he can open his mouth, Swami tells him, you are happy, right, that I fixed up the groom for you? And Kasturi is shocked. And Swami says, don't worry, I know that you have lost a son. Again Kasturi is shocked. He says, I know that pain is a lot, but this boy who is coming into your family will not only be a son-in-law, will also be a son for you. You don't worry about that. I will take care of everything. You need not worry at all. I know that you have not been given proper recognition in your university. That will also come, and you are bound to do many more great things. In fact, after you complete your university life, which happened in 1954, when you retire, come over and stay with me at Prashanthi Nilayam. You will write my Jeeva Charitra. You will write my biography. You will write my history. And Kasturi was simply shocked. This is 1949, and Swami is telling somebody who actually doesn't believe, who actually criticizes, telling that you come and settle, you will be writing my Jeeva Charitra. And in fact, for many years, Kasturi didn't believe that that would happen, till actually, you know, we heard him speaking about how he went to actually refer from scholars whether there was meaning and sense in what Swami had said. So that same kind of zeal and enthusiasm was there. That is why he did not actually believe that he would be writing Swami's biography till it actually happened in 1960 when he wrote the first part, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. That is when he realized that everything runs according to a master plan.
You know, just the beauty of the way Swami is doing it. You know, one thing, one side there is a pain which is desperate for solace, and the other side there is a need which has to be answered, his daughter's wedding. And the third thing is a passion which is Swami is addressing. Because here is a professor of history. He's a historian, and nothing interests him more than history and, you know, the most exciting things happening. And Swami is throwing him the bait of, come and write my life story. And I think he's seen enough of Swami even in that short period to know that his is not an ordinary life. You know, whether he is what people believe him to be, he's definitely an interesting life to write about. But, you know, that is the beauty of the thing. And, you know, he has seen Swami perform some things which is not common for other people, but still there is yet to go, because Swami is slowly breaking into him and slowly breaking into his preconceived notions. And that is why, you know, when we spoke to Padma Kasturi, Professor Kasturi's daughter, she narrates of an incident which happens much, much later. You know, you mentioned 1949. 1954 he comes and settles in Prashanthi Nilayam. That's when the Sanatan Sarathi starts. And
actually, just for continuity's sake, we will maybe talk about it in the next Satyam Shivam Sundaram, but in 1950,
right,
Swami actually performs the wedding of Padma Kasturi at Prashanthi Nilayam during the Dasara.
Right.
Because we just jumped the gun a bit, I thought we'll just mention this. We'll come into detail later.
Yeah,
but yes,
and just running through the details in 1950, and that's when Swami tells him that, you know, you can come back and settle here. And I think he goes and takes charge of All India Radio. That was the time when he named it Akashvani. He was the assistant producer of program in Akashvani for those few years. Then he comes back, I think 54, 56, when the Sanatan Sarathi is about to begin. And he is living in the ashram. That time there was only East Prashanti. One of those rooms were given to Kasturi and his family. Swami used to visit them so often. And he was meeting people who had had some amazing experiences. But still Swami was actually breaking into layers and layers of his, you know, mental understandings till he reached his heart. And actually, we'd like to play that small clip where Padma Kasturi, you know, narrates that defining moment. We spoke about, you know, God of small things. For the number of things which Kasturi has seen, this is definitely a very small incident. You know, he must have come across incidents like this every day. But for some reason, this was something which was so great for him. And, you know, let's just listen to that episode.
But once it seems father was there in Swami's room and Swami suddenly fell and went in trance. And then Vibhuti came out of his mouth and hand and everything. And after he came out of the trance, he said, I had been to Dehradun. When Dr. Krishna was coming then here in Puttaparthi, he said his mother just now passed away. She was asking for my darshan and her last moment. I went and gave her darshan. Then it seems he started telling about who were all there. Then father was interested. He said, let me take down Swami. Then he said, no, yes, he can take down. He gave him a slip of paper. And father started taking down as Swami was saying who were all there and what all happened. So then afterwards Swami said, after 3 or 4 days a letter will come and you can bring your list and then tell it. Then after 4 days the letter came. And Swami asked, he didn't open the cover. He has sent word for my father. Then father went up and then he tallied both the letter and he asked him to read the letter and it was exactly the same.
Okay.
So father was very much excited and he came running home from the mandir. Anandam, Anandam, he was shouting. I was there and I didn't know what has happened to him. He said, oh, we have got Bhagwan, we have got, how fortunate we are having Bhagwan, Bhagwan, like that he came home. And he didn't take any food. He was so excited. My grandmother was there. She was very much worried what has happened to my son. He's like this. He didn't like tea also. Whenever we offered tea, she said, no, Bhagwan is there. I don't want anything. We have got Bhagwan. What else I want like that, he was telling. Then in the evening during bhajan, those days Swami used to come around house.
Yes.
He just passed and then he came to our house and asked my grandmother, how is Kasturi, what is he doing? Then she cried, Swami is not taking food, he is just saying, Bhagwan, we have got Bhagwan, we have got Bhagwan, what is this, Swami, what has happened to him? Then Swami said, when the truth is revealed, it will happen like that.
Oh.
Right, that was a clip and, very interesting. He has come to Swami through miraculous events, where Swami is showing the ability of going into somebody's dream and instructing people. But still, that moment when it comes, and there might be a defining moment. I think this was one of those in Kasturi's life.
Exactly, and that statement is so profound, When you come face to face with truth, you lose interest for everything else in life. You wonder whether, is it worthwhile to spend life pursuing everything that is false? Swami says that what these eyes see, they're actually false, and what the eyes don't see, that is true. That is the truth. And Kasturi lost interest to eat, drink, sleep, everything when that moment of truth is revealed. Maybe it's for our bodily sustenance that, Swami does not reveal his truth always to us, because I think we would all go mad. We would all become mad in love for Swami. And we have all had those experiences in our lives when once in a while Swami has revealed that truth. I think it's up to us to cherish that and keep reminding ourselves always of that, of what Swami's reality is.
Even as I was listening to that clip, I'm reminded of what Swami writes in Ramakatha Rasavahini.
Hmm.
There Swami describes how Rama, Sita and Lakshmana are banished into the forest and they have a stopover, in the ashram of Rishi Bharadwaja.
Mm.
And Bharadwaja is the one who actually tells them you can go to Panchavati and that's a good place to live for
set
14 years because he's supposed to live in the forest for 14 years. So they stay overnight in Sage Bharadwaja's ashram. And in the morning, Rama and Lakshmana wake up early in the morning and they go to the sage and say, will you accompany us to the river? Because you're supposed to do the early morning sandhya and all the other ritualistic worships there. And Sage Bharadwaja looks at Rama and says, for what?
Hmm.
He says, I'm sure you would be following all these things in your ashram and you have to do your morning sandhya, right? And Rishi says, for what? He says, isn't it a practice? He says, see, all this I did for all these years, for this moment, to be face to face with you. After seeing you, if I'm going to go back to all those worship, what a fool I will be. He said, you are here for a drama. You can go and continue the drama, but I know the truth. I'm not going to pursue it anymore.
Beautiful.
That is the fortune which is in front of us, because Swami has come in this form and he's allowed us to recognize him. We might not have recognized him in all his glory, but even that, as Kasturi put it, you have seen the Himalayas at least as a pebble, and that itself is a fortune.
Prem, we have just got about another 5 minutes before we can end this. rather than speak and fill the air, do we have any other clip of Padma Kasturi that you said you have made?
Yeah, maybe we could play that one small clip when she says, during the last few days of Professor Kasturi's life, you know, she describes how deeply attached he was to Swami and how Swami responded to that attachment. You know, when the last few days, when he was in pain, he was still thinking of Swami because Swami was playing a little drama he had taken upon somebody's illness. And when Kasturi heard of it, how troubled he was and how desperate he was to go and see Swami, maybe I'll just play that clip.
He got an attack of jaundice in April and he passed away in August. Swami was then at Bangalore. When Swami, it seems he was not well. Swami was not well in Vrindavan. And somebody came and told Swami was not well. He didn't give darshan for 3 days. It seems he took somebody's heart attack or anything, something like that. And he has become very weak, and all the day came and told my father. He immediately wanted to go and see, because they said Swami has become very thin and he has become very weak. So immediately he had that attachment towards Swami, no? He says, I must go and see Swami. Somebody is saying that he has become. So please arrange some taxi and take me to. He was not in a good condition at that time. He was not in a, he had jaundice and the glucose was very low. So he pleaded me, you arrange for one taxi, we'll go start early in the morning, 5 o'clock, and I will just have his darshan and then come back. You please take me, he pleaded. I said, how can we go? Because you are not my father only, you are Prashantali property. Tomorrow if something happens, then the Kutumbara was there. They will scold me and I don't know what Swami will say. Then he said, you know, if you go and tell, it was in the evening, he said, if you go and tell now Kutumbrao, then he will say, he will call up Swami and then get permission. So you go to Kutumbrao after 10. So I went about 10 o'clock to Kutumbrao and said, I have arranged everything. He wants to go. He was crying almost. Then Kutumbrao told me, you are taking a risk. I said, I have got to take a risk because he's pleading me. Then he asked me if something happens on the way, then it's good because he is going to see the Swami Darshan, he is thinking of Darshan, let it happen. Then Kutumbara said, no, no, it's a risk. Then he and Dr. Aldeja both of them came and convinced him that we will ask Swami and get his permission and then he can go. The whole night he was crying, oh, this is my fate, I can't just go and see Swami. Then he wrote a letter to Swami. For that Swami sent reply.
Kasturi, accept my blessings. Don't have any fear. Swami is with you and around you. Be courageous. Think of him. Give up other thoughts. The body is a water bubble. On its account, do not feel sad. Spend your time in thinking of God. Yours, Baba.
Beautiful. So beautiful. I mean, what, when you get to hear this about the love between the Lord and the devotee, you just get lost. Just don't know what else to add or say. I was just thinking, Prem, maybe the best way to conclude would be, you know, the next Thursday we would have gone past the new year. And I was thinking that the best way to conclude it would be possibly to read that letter that Swami wrote to Kasturi on the occasion of a new year. And you know, dear listeners, actually this is an amazing, interesting incident, because Swami wanted to send a New Year greeting card to Kasturi. And how do you give a greeting card? How do you send a greeting card to a person whom you meet at least 10-20 times every day?
Who is your neighbor?
Who is your translator? Who is there in your room? And so Swami makes this card, writes the message, calls the devotee, gives it to him, and says, "Go to Bukapatnam and post it," and writes Kasturi's address on it. And so the devotee goes to Bukapatnam and posts the New Year card, which reaches Kasturi on New Year, and he's so thrilled with these beautiful steps that Swami took to make him receive a Happy New Year card.
You know, in that New Year card, interestingly, Swami has actually written a prayer which each one of us can, you know, put forth to Swami. Swami saying, I'm sending you this prayer which you can use as your New Year prayer, and that's the card. So maybe quickly we'll just read out those words, because it's beautiful and it's definitely useful for all of us. And even as we are, you know, heralding this New Year, maybe this could be the message which we all could hold in our hearts. the prayer goes, I firmly believe there is none kinder than you to shower grace on me. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am at your lotus feet? I firmly believe you will respond quick when I do pray and plead. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am crying aloud for you? I firmly believe you are ever beside me to guide my steps aright. Tell me, is this not the reason why I am yours through day and night? I firmly believe you can never say no, whatever I ask from you. Tell me, is this not the reason why I long for a glance from you? What have you designed for me this time? Why this dire delay to offer boons? However long you may make me wait and wail, I will not leave. I'll be standing still until your loving eyes do turn on me.
Wow. What a beautiful lesson on even determination, because Swami says once you determine to win Lord's love, either your wish must be granted or you must just collapse from that effort.
In fact, you know, in that letter is a postscript. Swami writes it postscript. And he says, Kasturi, begin the new year with the above prayer and the blessings and boons follow in plenty. For he writes, endowed with long life and sound health, surrounded by children, grandchildren and friends, keep on imbibing joy through bhakti and jnana. Now, those are the blessings which Swami wrote. And, you know, it's such a beautiful incident as such. Whenever I used to think of this, when we put it on the website, we actually have written this as our thought about this incident. You know, here is the Swami who is actually the neighbor of yours and who sends a letter out to Bukkapatnam, which comes posted and, you know, lands in your hands on New Year's Day. Isn't that what Swami has done to all of us? You know, here is the Swami who has actually always lived in our hearts, even before we actually knew him as Swami. And this Swami from our hearts comes out, manifests in front of us, makes us love him, and gives us the joy of seeing him in front of us. You know, the Swami who is always with us and always actually part of us. He's given us the joy of seeing him and loving him and enjoying the presence of his existence.
And just like Kasturi, though was thrilled with the card but never forgot that it is nothing very special, because that Swami who has sent the card is actually my neighbor. Let us also, you know, cherish and realize that it was special that Swami came to us in a form, but let us not forget that that form that came to us is actually enshrined deep in our hearts.
So dear listeners, with that small thought, we're going to leave you and we're going to meet you only next year. So happy new year to all of you from the studios of Radio Sai.
And in the next fortnight of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, when we have it, we shall continue along with Kasturi's arrival to Prashantinilayam for the wedding of his daughter Padma, and then take up the story from 1950 onwards.
So dear listeners, we offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet and pray for his blessings and grace for all of you for this new year. We're going to leave you with a song. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program, Love to Love.
Oh, परमेश्वर हे नाथ माना हे जगदीश्वर अनाथ नाथा हे परमेश्वर हे नाथ माना हे जगदीश्वर अनाथ नाथा हे दीनबंधु करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु करुणा सिंधु हे मूर्ति मंत्र प्रशाली हे सनातन सारथी हे सनातन सारथी
प्रेम स्वरूप